Jess McLean. I want to start it with where you were born, when you were born.
Well, I was born here in Alaska, of course. We always assume so many people were born here, but not that many, really, in Alaska. However, I went to school locally to about half the time, and to Seattle, in Seattle and the regions nearby, including Vancouver, British Columbia, the rest of the time. After high school, I went to the University of Washington. Also went to a business college for a year. Mm-hmm. And I got through a total of 5 years, only one in law school, though.
And how did you get your past the bar? How did you get into the bar in Alaska?
I was in law school in 1939 to 40, and of course the World War II came on, and since I wasn't advanced ROTC, I was on call. But not assigned, because I was living in Alaska during the summers and my permanent residence was here. I wasn't really assigned to any regiment in the state of Washington, so I wasn't called up until 1941, and I went in with the Alaska contingent. And because I had been clerking in law offices in Anchorage and Juneau, most of my war service was in the infantry with special assignments to the military court system. I was on, of course, everything from the summary, the special, to the general courts. Mm-hmm. And that gave me, together with the time I spent as clerk, plenty of, more than adequate, time and eligibility to take the bar exam, which I did in 1946 when I got out of the service. I was admitted right afterwards, but it was 47 by that time. They took a great deal longer to correct the papers. It was a 3-day exam, not unlike what they're taking today. An oral exam in the courtroom, only 3 of us took it, one in Anchorage, one in Sitka, and one in Juneau, me. And I was the only one that stayed in Alaska. The other two left the territory.
After practicing for a while?
No, they never did practice. They only got admitted and left. Business wasn't near as good in those days. As a matter of fact, the law business, I thought, was overcrowded. Mm-hmm. At one time, did you know, there were, and maybe I have my figures wrong, but there were a total of 50 lawyers in Juneau, of which only 4 or 5 worked for government agencies. All the rest were in private practice. Maybe 50 is the wrong number, but it's a dramatically high proportion in private practice. It was because in the golden age of Juneau, 1912 to 1917, that the mining activity was at its height. And there was all kinds of litigation over claims, Placer and Hard Rock mining claims. And practically all the law business was related to mining.
Do you remember some of the lawyers who were here during that period, during the early period?
Well, directly related to my activities, of course, there were people of the Wickersham crowd, Henry Roden, Grover Wynn, and Wickersham were the office together there in the Valentine building. I can, from 1922 or 23, my first recollections is I wandered up and down the halls. I frequently saw them, and Grover Wynn had a son, Bill Wynn, who I kind of palled around with, and very often we sat down listening to some of the chatter that would go on between Grover, Henry, and Wickersham. The other lawyers that were around, and I'd have to refresh my memory. I can't remember them all that were here and before that time in the 1912 to 17, but there were lots of them. I remember one, Fred Wetrick by name, was interesting mostly because I was taking a case up on appeal to the Ninth Circuit, and they'd arranged to hear the case in Seattle. I think Henry Roden was on the case with me in Juneau, but he didn't want to take it on appeal, and the client, an old mining man here, said Fred Wetrick would be the ideal one to associate with in Seattle. And when I went to see Fred, right away he said, oh, he practiced in Juneau, and how's my old house? And which house? I'd never heard of him, you know.
Yeah.
And he described it up on Gold Belt Avenue, and right away I recognized it because it was a big house with a tremendous ballroom, hardwood floor and French glass windows and doors in it. And at that time it was owned by Dave Gross, who owned several theaters in Juneau. But Fred went on to say that he built the house in 1911 or 1912 and practiced here during those boom years, then moved on down to Seattle, and he was the senior lawyer in a firm there in Seattle. I imagine he's dead now because he'd be close to 100 years old.
What was the name of the firm in Seattle?
I don't remember. Mm-hmm. Wetrick, though, was the first name, Wetrick or H. There were many others, and you know, I just don't have them at the tip of my tongue. I have to pause and think about who they all were during those golden years.
Yeah. But Wickersham, Wynn, and Roden all practiced together. Did they have a partnership, or did they just...
No, I'm sure they were all just...
same building?
Well, sharing offices.
Mm-hmm.
Wickersham was also involved in politics, as were many of them, all the lawyers, I'd guess, in Alaska.
Why?
Frequently. I don't know exactly, but prior to statehood, it wasn't uncommon to see the legislature almost half made up of lawyers, and of course you've heard that one session that I was in, the 55 one, the House had a majority of lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Was it expected if you passed the bar and were in the bar that you'd become active in politics?
You'd be active not only in politics but in community affairs such as Chamber of Commerce, Rotary Club, and so forth, whereas today, since statehood or since 1955, whether it be on a national level or just Alaska, you seldom find lawyers. As they practice law today, they zero their thinking into the pure practice of law 8 hours a day, and they don't get involved in activities such as we did. It was not uncommon for a lawyer to be maybe a third of his time, because at the Chamber of Commerce, for example, when I was president, Fred Eastall was a secretary, and Bucheever was in there too as a board member, all lawyers of a board, say, of five people. None of us, we didn't have any executive staff, no paid secretaries except to pay for the expense of whatever desk or office we might have. But all of us were expected in those days to do that, and I'm sure that predecessors from the golden era did the same.
How could you do it, plus also keep up the practice? Did you have time? Was there any problem with time?
No, earnings were a bit skimpy. As an observation, I would say that Juneau, maybe because of the capital city, had more lawyers than the town really could afford, and they frequently engaged in other businesses. There wasn't any frowning on the district attorney, for example, having a private practice, or me being tied in with insurance activities,
mm-hmm.
which I was, and Robertson's office, Robertson and Montego, as I knew it when I was younger, and Judge the founder of Robertson's office. I assume you're going to be talking with them. Well, the name, there's pictures right there at the head of the steps as you go in the office. In Robertson, they had an Alaska personal service, and they certainly can elaborate on this and make it more accurate, but I can remember they even sold automobiles. Auburn cars, you probably never heard of them, but I sure remember the cars they were to a young man 15 or 20 years old. Auburn was the Cadillac or the Lincoln Continental of today, or the top-ranking Mercedes.
Uh-huh. did a lot of people, I mean, how big was Juneau then?
4,000, 3,000 or 4,000 people, 4,000. Of course, Juneau was always geared to mining. We didn't have much government, even though it was the capital city. And lawyers, for the most part, with the exception of the criminal activity that would be government-related, were largely in commercial law.
Were firms divided between criminal law and commercial law at all?
No, I don't think so. We all dabbled in it.
In everything?
Yes, everything. We were all in the general practice of law. I can't think of anyone who claimed to have special knowledge in the field. In those days, I think there was enough of rivalry and, in fact, a heck of a lot more rivalry existed then than does today. It wasn't uncommon, and if you read the early newspapers, you'll see where even the editors denouncing one lawyer and favoring another and on the front page of the newspaper,
mm-hmm.
editorializing on the front page. It was a lot more spirited, even the bar luncheons and those few that I went to, just learning. I thought it was a good way to practice law.
Yeah. Who did you clerk with? You said you clerked in Anchorage and Juneau.
Tom Donahue in Anchorage for a while, and Bert Faulkner of Faulkner Banfield in Juneau.
Want to first tell me about Tom Donahue and then about Bert Faulkner?
Well,
is it Donahue or Donahue?
We call it Donahue, or I always did.
Okay.
It was Diamond and Donahue, located in the building that's now part of the Hilton Westward Hotel on that ground. It was a frame building there. Diamond was away at the time as the delegate to Congress, and Mr. Donahue, Tom, was involved in practically all commercial work. The office had been in Valdez, and in about 1939 they moved the seat of the court from Valdez to Anchorage, and I found myself in the office a good deal of the time by myself. Tom had an airplane. Even then, it was expected lawyers do a lot of getting around on their own. If it wasn't in a dog team, it was in an airplane or a boat or whatever it might be. And I suppose there were lawyers who practiced law with an office in a boat. I can't think of any offhand, but I know Tom went to a number of places out with his airplane out of Valdez. He survived, too. I was worried about that. There were, of course, rickety old airplanes. He had a Fairchild 24. Well, that's a detail you're not interested in. Flying on the mountains from Valdez to Anchorage was really a harrowing route.
Mm-hmm.
It scared me. I only went with him once. Oh, yes. The office in Valdez was in a little square building, probably 24 by 24, with a big potbelly stove in the middle and the books on the walls. I still have some of the books. I moved to Anchorage. Gradually, because most of their clients really were Valdez and Cordova oriented, and Latouche and all the communities. There was enough rivalry up there so that many resented Anchorage, even as Anchorage is resented by Juneau and Fairbanks today.
Why did they?
Well, it was the big boom area, and a lot of new people were coming in. And lawyers like L.V. Ray and Warren Cuddy, and I can't remember the others who were practicing in Anchorage. Who'd you say?
Ari Baumgartner.
Yeah, I didn't know him that well.
Seward.
Yeah, Seward. Yeah, these names are coming back to me and I can't remember the details.
That's all
right. It was a case of, in the case of Donahue, coming into Anchorage, and while he wasn't resented, he was coming in from the hinterland, and because he was old family and many of the others were all new Johnny-come-latelys, there was a kind of a resentment that it seemed to, you could feel it.
So the Anchorage people resented people like Donahue coming in, or Donahue resented the new people?
It was both ways, I would say. They never resented people like Grigsby, who came in. They weren't very... Grigsby and John Manders and some of those, they weren't aggressive to the point that they were thinking of money all the time.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned earlier, the practice of law was very casual, and they weren't picking at each other for involving maybe associates who weren't admitted to the bar, as it would be called an unauthorized practice now.
Mm-hmm. Did people practice who weren't admitted to the bar?
Never appeared in court, but I imagine they did a lot of work, including drafting of deeds. Deeds were only $5. I suppose they were only $2 in the teens, but by the in the 30s and even clear through 45, 46, 47, $5 was the standard price for a deed. Wills and that, I knew lawyers, Howard Stabler, for example, announced it was just a policy, is never to charge a penny for a will. He'd write any kind of will, even complex wills with trusts in them, without charge. His fees, as he viewed them, would come from the being attorney for the executor. So the practice was different.
Yeah.
A lot different.
So there wasn't real aggressive getting the money. When did that first start? When did they get more aggressive in the practice?
Oh, I think when lawyer, about the statehood time, I could detect a real change. There was a great expansion in the court system, way more than those who had previously boosted statehood talked about. You can probably gather from my remarks here, I was never a real booster of statehood. I always felt that prior to the time oil was discovered, we could never afford it, never afford a court system, never afford the schools and the rest, and I generally voted against it and supported causes that were for deferring statehood or moving into a commonwealth status.
Were there other lawyers who believed the same as you?
Oh, yes. I wasn't alone in it, though I remember one vote in the legislature, I was alone.
You were the only one?
I was the only one.
Which legislature was that?
55 session. But I was voting purely on the economics of it.
Who were other lawyers who thought that statehood...
All those connected with any industry. For example, the canned salmon industry dominated activities here, and of course they were dealing with the federal fish and game people. And the canned salmon market wasn't in any great shape. It was all right, and I suppose the industry was making money, but it wasn't anything dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
So that their problems, and I certainly wasn't aligned with them. I was never supported in my political activities by the canned salmon industry.
Mm-hmm.
But I know they were reluctant to get into it, as were the mining, anything from the industry side. They preferred to...
Any local Southeast versus Central, or were there a lot of lawyers in Anchorage?
I would say by that time, by 1955, there was only one old Alaskan lawyer out of 10. In other words, maybe 9/10 of them were all new since World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And they came with a lot of enthusiasm for you might call joining the rest of the Union with statehood ideas. They were very liberal. And the fact that they were so outspoken and they so outnumbered the others, I'm talking about the Anchorage area when they said 9 out of 10, Fairbanks, Juneau, Ketchikan, the ratio was much less. It would be about a 50-50 division. Because Anchorage had boomed on account of the war, the buildup and the defense, and the White Alice construction. And as it boomed, it brought in a lot of new lawyers. So you have a hard time finding anyone in Anchorage who hardly remembers practicing law prior to World War II.
So the people who were practicing law prior to World War II, were they more likely to be against statehood and be representing the big mining interests and that sort of thing?
Yeah, 9/10 of them would be. They would be older and more conservative. Mm-hmm. There were some who felt, even though Wickersham and Diamond and others had introduced statehood bills in Congress, that that was being just making a gesture for new people who came to Alaska. They didn't ever expect it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they actively pursued it. Well, there are exceptions to this. In later years, it was quite evident that, particularly on those who were Democrats and who did not represent much of the industry, that they latched on to the cause. It was a good political. When there wasn't anything else going, you could always fire up enthusiasm for statehood and denounce the Federals.
Was that part of what happened in the 1950s when the Republicans were in the government in D.C.? Did the Democrats tie their hat to the statehood issue?
No, I think there was a turning point during the Eisenhower term when Eisenhower appointed an Alaskan as governor, Mike Stepovich.
Mm-hmm.
And that, if anything, would be a turning point. From then on, the way Mike spoke publicly and gave us probably encouragement as to what we could do politically was enough to get many of the, particularly the Democratic lawyers, rallying on the statehood theme to get elected to the territorial legislature and to get elected to any office anywhere and pick away at the Eisenhower popularity. They said although Eisenhower may have given lip service to the statehood cause and appointed an Alaskan as governor and maybe appointed a few Alaskan judges too, it was only lip service and we should continue with a delegate, Bob Bartlett by name, who was a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And of course Bartlett saw it as a good vehicle to increase his popularity, and with all the new people in the state, particularly in Anchorage, of course it was a landslide for him every year. It was smart politics, but we lucked out, I would say, lucked out with oil, the discovery of oil.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't have oil, if we were operating as the territory was in 1955, we'd be doomed. Just think if, for example, oil revenues didn't exist, what would it be like?
It would be very poor legislation. Back to practice of law in about the Ford. Well, actually, I wanted to ask you about your clerking with Bert Faulkner. What was...
Well, of course, there's so many who can tell you more about Bert than I can. I grew up with Jean, his daughter, and Roma and Bert were very good friends of my parents. Bert and my dad were in the marshal's office together, and it goes back. Bert was a Nova Scotian, as was my father, and so we had a good personal, almost daily relationship in and out of their house, and Gene Faulkner was in and out of our house an awful lot. Bert was a type lawyer who I greatly admired in the sense that he was dedicated to practicing law. He never did get involved in any other mercantile businesses except to own property. He had some interest in some buildings, commercial buildings, in partnership with probably the merchant himself. But other than that, Bert didn't really ever want to claim any ownership in anything. I doubt if he even owned his house. I know Henry Roden, for example, the dwelling house they lived in was always in his wife's name. He just felt that he had enough trouble with people on their title and property ownership that, and Howard Stabler was another one. And maybe that was inculcated in me enough to want to avoid property ownership too. I've never really felt very comfortable owning property. I don't know why. But it wasn't not title problems. It's just that in the law business, you are frequently faced with the problems of ownership of property and the clash that goes on in disputes one way or the other. And a lawyer had so much of them in his 6 or 8 hours of daily routine that he didn't want to be a party to owning it himself. That's my own guess.
What kind of property problems that were so prevalent?
Well, if you owned a commercial building, you had to have a tenant. I mean, if you were out hustling around for tenants, competing with others, rather distasteful. A dwelling house, well, somebody have to buy it, pay for it, sell it. Usually you're doing that for others. You don't have to do it for yourself.
In Anchorage, real estate was a big business for a lot of lawyers.
Indeed it was.
So
in Juneau, not to that extent.
Mm-hmm. And in Juneau, you think it was just the hassle that lawyers saw dealing with other people's property that they stayed away from getting into that?
Well, from a personal standpoint, it's the way I would judge it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know why, except recalling some of the lawyers around Juneau, I'm hard put to think of any of them who that are my age. Oh, one or two exceptions, yes. But they always did it in either partnerships or limited partnerships or something like that, keeping their name out of it, which is a difference from lawyers nowadays.
Yeah, big difference. When you were clerking for Bert Faulkner, what did you do?
Oh, a little bit of probate work for him. I acted as executor on some of the cases they had in the office where they needed someone in Juneau. You have to keep in mind that if a spouse was a non-resident or wanted to move out of the state, communication even to Seattle was slow, and we didn't have telephone service, so we didn't have airmail service. So they just turned it over to the lawyer to do in title work. All title work was doing abstracts, and I must have made 500 abstracts of property here in Juneau. I spent the first year of what I was doing, I would like to say the first year, but half of the first year up there in the recorder's office in a safe. It was all the books were in a safe. Oh, it was terrible. And inside the safe, because it was all concrete, they didn't have much of any electric lighting except a bare old bulb hanging down from the ceiling. I think if I were bald today, I'd attribute it to that damn light bulb being right up the... You know, I can remember it very plainly. And I should go up there and look and see if it's still there, what they're doing with that old safe.
Why did you become a lawyer? That sounds like extremely dull work. I wouldn't have encouraged to go into law.
Well, I asked myself that question, and I've asked, you know, over the years, because most certainly I could have made a lot more money than if I hadn't wasted, not wasted, but spent half or more of my time in the law business. as time's gone on, of course, I've been spending the last 10 years, 12 years, I had no other activities. I've been disposing of any property interests I had for the reasons I mentioned. I was never very comfortable with them. My father was essentially in the mining business, so he always seemed to get tied into more scholarly activities like law business and other professions that his brothers were involved in, from school teaching to accountant type work. And his forebears were being Scottish, and being many of them from the big families were passed off as nothing more than indentured servants to the Hudson Bay Company. And as they moved west, cousins and uncles and relatives were, because they knew how to read, I would think, more than anything else, and they knew how to write. They were literate. They found themselves either in what we'd construed the equivalent of law business, handling affairs of other people. And it sort of seemed to be in the family.
Do you have any relatives that were lawyers?
Yes, John McLean Sitka was my father's uncle. Of course, I never knew him, and I didn't know too much about him, except I heard my dad say that he was... he'd written to one of my dad's older brothers when they came west, and urged them to consider the future of the country, that there were rumors of gold in the Klondike and things like that. So three of the McLeans went into the Klondike. That would be my father and his two brothers, and of course there were other cousins and so forth. Not many of them are of a record, except John's brother or cousin came to Juneau in 1880 when gold was discovered over here. And he's of interest not because he was really related to practicing law, though he did prosecute the first lynchings in Juneau. And the story, I'll show it to you later, more for laughs than anything else. It's essentially that a writer from New York had come to Alaska to do a story, and as he writes the story, the boat came in, and he went ashore, and he'd heard about Juneau, and he was amazed that everything was so quiet. They walked from the beach up to the main street and looked around, didn't see anyone, but finally somebody walked in their direction, and, "Why is it so quiet in Juneau?" he said, and the man turned around and pointed over there where two natives were still strung up on the makeshift gallows, hung, of course. And as they pressed him for information about why they'd lynched the two, if you want to call it lynching, maybe it was lynching, but they did have a hearing, gave him a quick trial and hung him. He was referred to as Doc McLean. Now that would be a cousin, I think, of John's. Might be his brother, but I've never really researched it. My wife's working on that. He was called Doc. His name was Dan, though, really. And he figured in the early founding of activities in Juneau, but he's more prominently known as the founder of Treadwell.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Dan.
Yeah.
So is all mining.
Everyone came with to make money. They didn't come as a lawyer to practice law. They came because of other... John McLean became because of the military. He happened to have some tie-in with the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And why it was the Army, I don't know, except his writings, and there are lots of them around, had to do with his teaching meteorological techniques to Alaskans. In other words, he had a hang up on keeping track of the weather.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to say was it, it'll rain tomorrow.
Well, in other words, the early records of how much rainfall occurred in Sitka or wherever else he went. Uh-huh. But he did come to Juneau in 1880. It was before in the 1870s when he was there in Sitka. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure, I don't remember the year he came.
But he practiced law in Sitka and Juneau?
Well, yes, and I don't know the extent of the practice. I've not researched it. It's a subject, though, I'd like to get into. Mm-hmm.
Did you know about him when you decided to go into law? Had you thought about
Yeah, I just heard my dad talk about it. I didn't really pay any attention. You asked why I got in law. And mm-hmm. In 1939, when I finished, 1938, when I was finishing, I sensed it in school that the engineering, there wasn't the demand for engineers. It didn't look like you'd ever get a job or you'd be better off in getting into some either business or profession. So I transferred to university college and from there to the law school. Mm-hmm. And I did it, I suppose, because my father may have been writing to me and urging me to look at some other things besides mining. He hadn't made any fortune. Well, I guess he had when he was young, so they tell me, but...
Checking to make sure you're
at home. Yeah, it seemed to have hooked up. Is the light coming on? Yeah, it's light's on. It's orange. You can edit all this.
Yeah. So your father, you said your father did make money in mining. But he said you were
yes,
going to
make well, he, money. Yes, well, my mother never thought he did, or he pooped it away on other investments, and there are a lot of stories about his investments. But his friends were generally lawyers, and they socialized together, and I just sort of grew up in that atmosphere. And that's probably why, despite opportunities I had in the insurance business, which was good, from a monetary standpoint, I could make five times more. The only reason I went into it was because there really wasn't a good chance of making much money in the law business.
When did you
Too many lawyers in 1946.
So after you took the bar, you went into insurance business?
No, I was always in the law business, and we had kind of family partnership involvements. My dad said, led me into the insurance business, and because I was admitted to practice law, I had good relationships with claims people, and it wasn't uncommon when I was handling a claim for a charter airlines, as you'd view it today, to have the owner say, well, here I've got this darned insurance that I'm trying to get to defend me in these wrongful death cases. Why don't you get the right kind of insurance for me? So it wasn't long before I had a specialty in insurance of what would be generally known as brokerage work, placing insurance in London and marine ferry system and anything that was pioneering, and the helicopters. And in fact, I did it for that business for half, or even I had half of all the business in Anchorage.
Uh-huh.
Only because I was a lawyer and I had the connections. So that's provided most of my financial support. But I always was in the law business for half time at least.
Oh, you were?
Always. And I had a separate office. Sometimes the offices were together, but usually they were separate offices, and I'd run back and forth upstairs, downstairs, depending on what was the most urgent. And I was in active practice and always had a jury case, at least one or two every year, mm-hmm. until a few years ago. I liked it, and I'd take them, never to cut fees, but fees were always niggardly, even by other firms, and I'm sure other lawyers are going to tell you, by today's standards, just a tenth or less of what they get today.
Is that percentage-wise, too? That a lawyer was at a lower standard of living in those days than they are now?
No, it was always a reasonably good living,
mm-hmm.
but not as good as what people would make in private business.
Even now, can they make as much as people would make in private business? A lawyer up here?
No, I don't think so. I don't think the situation has changed all that much. I just think the dedication of those lawyers to practicing law is to produce fees for a full 8-hour day, whereas years ago, though we might work and be around the office 12 hours a day, we only produced the equivalent of maybe 6 hours of revenue.
Mm-hmm. The bar itself, the Juneau Bar and Southeastern Bars, do they have any kind of disciplinary procedures? Were there any?
Very few. A federal judge may take a notion to reprimand or admonish a lawyer for some irregularity. Lawyers, if the pressure was on, even though they were critically speaking of one another, if one was in difficulties, they rallied around him,
mm-hmm.
more so than they do today.
What about William Paul? What happened with William Paul?
Junior or senior?
Senior.
Both of them had difficulties.
Well,
Bill
senior.
Paul, and I, of course, can only speak of knowledge of him from 1925 or 30 on. And I've forgotten how he ever got admitted, but he came to Juneau to serve in the territorial legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was almost the first one who could speak English almost, well, there must have been others, but they do remember him. He chose to stay here and raise his family. And invariably, he, like many others, would need money for the family. And he wasn't averse to getting involved in dealings over fish transfers back and forth. And because he was so active in attacking the canned salmon industry, they began to, so the story goes, and I think certainly Judge Arnold can tell you about it because he was on the other side with a great deal more accuracy than I can. But Bill Sr. found himself in disciplinary problems dealing with fish people. And he was kind of regarded as the only one I know of that, thinking of my mother and so forth, as being one who might be critical of other lawyers. Bill Paul Jr. came on the scene later, about 1940, worked hard. I have a lot of regard for him. And I'm not sure what percentage native they were, but I think Bill Sr. might have been 3/4 native, and Bill Jr. would be half of that. Certainly he was more than a quarter, and maybe half Bill Jr. was. But because of his dad, he had problems getting established in Juneau, though he stuck it out, and he took a lot of the tough cases, collection suits and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And though he was criticized a lot, I felt very sympathetic toward him. And even when I was on the grievance committee, and there was one, you know, before stated after 1955 in the integrated bar, fellows like Wendell Kay and others, I know Wendell defended him a couple of times on some things. Bill was practicing pretty close to the bone. He had to.
Mm-hmm.
His brother Fred, who moved to Seattle, practiced in Seattle. He's still alive.
Yeah.
He can tell you about it.
Yeah. Were there any other people who were taken to task? Disciplined in any way?
Yeah, I talked with Mike Monigal. Do you know him? Robertson Monigal,
yeah.
East on Annis?
Was he?
East on Bradley. Monigal was, don't say I said so, but he can No one wants to talk about their difficulties. Mm-hmm. It wasn't serious anyway. All the lawyers, I just happen to think of his name. There were others.
I'd like to ask you the differences between the Juneau, Anchorage, and Ketchikan Bay. Are there any general basic differences?
Not between Juneau and Ketchikan, and I'd be, I thought, as I mentioned earlier now, when I thought I was more active than I am now, even though some of it was half-time, some full-time, some years, you know, when I didn't have anything to do with insurance, I was full-time. And then when I was in politics, of course, I'd have to relinquish or any work that I was doing during those periods. The practice in Ketchikan is very similar to Juneau, though it's oriented and was oriented in those days more toward fishing, whereas Juneau was oriented more toward mining.
Mm-hmm.
In Valdez and in Nome and in Fairbanks prior to World War II, they weren't that far different than Juneau. We were all very remote places, even Ketchikan, the first city. A long way from Seattle, 2.5 days on a boat, you know, and Seward and Anchorage were the same. But I mean, much further remote, but same feeling of remoteness. And it wasn't until really World War II that things began to change. And I noticed them first in Fairbanks when I went up there. An interesting sidelight. I went once with my dad. I was about 10 years old, and we took the boat to Seward and went up to, we were headed to Fairbanks. It was a lot of mining activity, and that's where we wanted to go. But for some reason, we had to stay overnight in Anchorage. And I remember going up to the Getchell Hotel. That's on probably 4th and C. 1C, on the corner of the building. It may still be there. It's an old frame building. But I remember we went up to the room, and my dad was going to go out, and he was going to leave me in the room, and he said, well, we're not going to stay long in this place. We've got to get on to Fairbanks. This place will never amount to anything. Yeah. He said that about and at that time, probably 3,000 people around. Mm-hmm. No, he never thought it would amount to anything. It's just a railroad camp.
Mm-hmm.
There was some mining up in the Independence area, and there are a lot of mining stories. Can't think of too many of them to write to the law business right now. They'll come to me later, after I go home tonight.
Right. Write them down. Tape them.
What else have you got?
Okay. Who are the practitioners when you were practicing in the late 40s? Who were the major firms in Juneau, or which were the major firms in Juneau?
Faulkner's, and of course Banfield and Boutchever. Boutchever joined them in 48 or something, 49. Down at Robertson's office, it was just Robertson and Montego. Fred Eastell came later in 48 or 49.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Paul, Holzheimer was a judge and gone back to private practice, but that's never very successful. Once you're a judge, you know, you never really can practice. Henry Roden was active. Have you ever heard of a judge who's been on the bench sort of stepping down, going back in private practice?
Only commissioners, no.
To my knowledge, I don't know of any, though many have done it, but they've never gone in as real practicing lawyers. They've gone in as politicians, lobbyists, or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was true around Juneau, there were a number of those ex-judges. There was one from Nome, Gore, whose daughter married Frank Murkowski.
Mm-hmm.
He had a firm in Ketchikan, Gore and Jernberg. And I can remember some correspondence on legal matters coming from him. But he was always very patronizing, much like a judge would be from a bench, so he was probably judging more than he was practicing. Lester Gore. the question was, what are the...
Who are the people practicing when you started practicing?
In Juneau, Howard Stabler was busy. In fact, I had I did an office with him to the full extent, though I had a desk up at his place.
Mm-hmm.
And I handled those cases that he either didn't want or didn't have time for. He was a very prosecution-minded. He had been a DA over in Sitka. I guess that brought him to Alaska, say, about 1915 or thereabouts, and he stayed with the system through Sitka and came to Juneau, and when the Republicans went out, when would that have been? After Calvin Coolidge.
Yeah.
Or when Roosevelt came in, or somebody. He might have stayed through the Hoover administration, but he went on out and into private practice. He's bitter, always bitter, and tough guy to work with.
Why was he so bitter?
Oh, I don't know, very critical. He married very late in life. Charming person, Gladys's wife was. Mm-hmm. She was an ex-school teacher. I think it was a second marriage for him. And in those days, anytime you had a bad marriage, it just distorted your life for years afterwards. Nothing like today, particularly in small communities like Sitka and Juneau.
Mm-hmm.
He was a difficult person. I think I can say that. Tough to understand. He was reasonably active. And of course the Helmthal firm was here for a while, but they moved to Anchorage and after Jack died.
Was Jack Helmthal really the...
Yeah, he was...
The moving force behind the Helmthal firm?
Yeah, I would say, my experience, he was always the one that people wanted to see and talk with in preference to Cy,
mm-hmm.
his younger brother.
Yeah.
There's, of course, lots of talk about the family, and other lawyers who remember better can voice opinions on why Cy got the judgeship over Jack. John, his son, you've talked with and know him.
Why did John end up, most people who start in Juneau stay in Juneau. It appears that it's an old establishment type place where families have been here for years and they don't want to move away. Why did the Helmthals move away?
Well, John married who were more oriented to Anchorage, and they probably had more determination to make a financial success out of a practice than those lawyers who were here. And I'd say that essentially is the difference. Even today, the fact that you're in Anchorage, your preference to a little community like Juneau or Ketchikan, you're there because that's where the action is and you can make money.
But I didn't grow up in Juneau. It seems that if you grew up here, people don't like to leave.
Well, it's like a disease. It gets you after a while and you... I know you're better off without it. I wanted to go to Anchorage. In fact, I did for a while. Have a little practice up there,
mm-hmm.
but only for a very short period. My wife didn't. She grew up in Juneau, and she liked it here. Her parents were here, and she wanted to be with them. I like the excitement. I always have.
Yeah.
And so I probably am not of the old conservative, negative personality, though you'd never hear a note from my remarks. But I would be in the negative conservative groups up in Fairbanks and Anchorage if I were up there. But I'm really, more aggressive, more optimistic than most conservative lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
I talk that way.
But do you consider yourself a conservative lawyer?
Yes.
You do. Mm-hmm. Do you consider the Juneau Bar to be conservative or middle?
Oh, I think it's been the new people who've come to practice now have, even in our own firm, there's hardly a conservative left,
mm-hmm.
as I consider a conservative, even the Democrats. We have a conservative Democrat here and a liberal one, too. But even the conservative Democrat, I'd say, is very liberal by standards of Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
30, 40 years ago.
Why is that happening? Why?
I don't know. Governments come on the scene. Government's going to do a lot of things for people, and they think that's the way it works. Maybe Ronald Reagan will turn it around.
There was another, speaking of Republicans, and Mildred Herman was here for a long time.
Oh, yes. I would like to say something about Mildred. She was well known in the community. She began a LaSalle course to be a lawyer. And her appearance, she was very robust and overweight. It's a joke that in those days when airplanes first came into being around here, that she couldn't sit in an ordinary chair, such as the chair I'm sitting in now. She'd have to have two chairs. She was that big. She had two children, Barbara and Chi. Chi is a lawyer in Los Angeles, and I know where Barbara is. But she, over a lot of opposition, even my mother and others who admired her, her industry, her aggressiveness and so forth, kind of frowned on the fact she wanted to be a lawyer. But anyway, she went ahead with the course, and she took the bar exam. There was great moaning and groaning when they heard that she was admitted to practice law. But she just charged right ahead, and nobody came to see her or anything. And I can remember, because I was appointed to a few cases with her. But prior to that, she would go up to the jail at times when somebody would be in for trouble and sort of stand around and say, "I'm a lawyer, do you want one?" Almost soliciting, you might say. She made a lot of mistakes, of course. She didn't have the time or the patience to delve into some of the real requirements, and a lot of fun was poked at her, and she got a few clients in trouble, probably. But she was interesting in that in some of the cases, in those days there weren't any lawyers in Sitka, and for some reason Sitka turned out more of the darn rape cases and attempted. And a lot of divorces came out of Sitka. And for one of, and I don't just quite, well, I was appointed to a lot of them. And if it was to any serious degree a rape case, sometimes they'd appoint two. And invariably the judge would put Mildred Herman on it with us. So the two of us tried them almost back to back during the court term. Two or three cases a year, not all from Sitka, but I can just remember Sitka figured prominently. And in those cases, Mildred always had the same technique. She could never get out and walk around and interview witnesses or anything like that. So I was usually the one who handled all the testimony, the direct and cross on a lot of it too. But handling the cross of some of the state's witnesses was what Mildred really relished. She had a strong enough voice and sit down, and she had a very fat arm with little pudgy fingers, you know, and she would get up pretty close, move her chair around so she was right there, and she would lash away. I don't think she ever offended the jury, but they just took her in stride, and she always wanted to make the final argument. We'd split because we were always defense. We only had one crack at it, but I would take the first 10 minutes and she would take the last 10 minutes. And maybe that worked because we got a lot of acquittals. So I knew Mildred in that sense. And really, I liked her. I was kind of amused. I wouldn't necessarily want her handling my commercial work, though.
Did she handle mostly criminal work?
Uh-huh.
She didn't get any commercial work.
Well, no, she got some, but not much. You seldom saw anything that she did. She might make a mortgage, a classic example, and Banfield can expand on it if you can remember to ask him about how Mildred would either make up a bill of sale or a chattel mortgage or something and not file any what's that form for creditors' claims? That goes with inventories. there's an affidavit required there, and she'd always forget it. So he set aside a few of her transactions. So they asked Norman about it. I didn't. But we all made mistakes, so don't think I'm criticizing her. I have it, just no time for confession anyway, but even Banfield has made mistakes.
Did she fit into the Juneau Bar? Did they accept her?
Well, in a colorful sense. She didn't come to the Bar Association meetings. There were only 8 or 10 of us. It was a Saturday noon thing, and I'd have a few drinks, and sometimes we'd have to go back to work. But Mildred was never there that I ever saw her there. She'd come to the bar picnic, though.
Was the bar picnic for family?
No, just a drinking party out at somebody's cabin as a rule.
Where did the bar meet?
At Percy's Cafe, which was down where I guess the Viking restaurant is now. It was Juneau Billiards and something else for a while, and then Percy put his name on it, and then they built the Baranoff in 1938, and I guess we moved up there. I wasn't admitted then, but I did go to as kids, they'd go see where your dad was.
Mm-hmm. So your dad went to the bar?
No, but he would, he was down at the Alaska Juneau on Saturdays, but Bill Wynn would take me. Bill, because he'd have to go maybe get his dad to drive him out to their cabin or something like that, but I can just remember it. Banfield probably was down there. He was practicing in 32 or 33, so he'd remember it.